Hello and welcome to Back Chat, your podcast all about scoliosis, yoga and back care. My name is Christine Jaregi-Berry. I'm a yoga teacher, creator of the Yoga Berry Yoga for Scoliosis community and YouTube channel, and this show is all about supporting you on your scoliosis journey. So if you're looking for practical advice and inspiration on how to manage the condition with yoga and movement, then you're in the right place. Hello, everyone, and good afternoon if you are in the UK. Maybe good morning if you are in America right now. My name is Christine Jaregi-Berry, for those of you who don't know me. I'm a yoga teacher. I specialize in yoga for scoliosis, and most of you know that I do this every Wednesday afternoon. We have a little chat about scoliosis. We normally have a topic that we focus on, and I sometimes have interview guests, and today is one of those days. So we're going to be talking about osteoporosis today, which I'm really excited about because it's something that always seems to come up, and I always get loads and loads of questions about this topic. So if you are here live, obviously come and say hello. We do have a chat here. Those of you who don't know what I'm talking about right now, because you're listening to this podcast on Apple, on your Apple podcast or on Spotify, don't worry. But if you are interested in joining us live, then you can ask us your questions on a Wednesday afternoon or whatever time zone you are in. But let me introduce my guest today. So it's Dr. Lani Simpson, and she is a chiropractic doctor. She's a certified clinical densitometrist. So I had to look up this word. It's quite a difficult word. She is also an Iyengar yoga teacher, which I'm really excited about. And she's the author of this fabulous book here. It's called No Nonsense Bone Health Guide, which I've just been reading, and it's really, really good, really lots of practical information. So let me bring her on now. There she is. Hello and welcome.
Thank you. Nice to see you.
Yeah, and thank you so much for taking the time. I know it's early for you.
Yes, it's not the afternoon. It's 8 a.m. here in California, Berkeley.
In California, yes. Yeah. Yes, brilliant. Have you got good weather at least?
No, it's actually cold here today, but we're going to have good weather next week.
Nice. Good. Well, we had some snow yesterday, very randomly, so I wasn't too happy about it, especially because I had my washing outside, but never mind. So yes, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us, because I do think this is a really, really important topic. Especially for the adults. Well, I mean, we can go into this a little bit more, because obviously in your book you say really it's important for any age to talk about osteoporosis. But maybe before we get into this, would you mind kind of telling us a little bit about how you got into this field and how you got to be so passionate about this topic?
Well, I was diagnosed myself with borderline osteoporosis when I was in my mid-40s. I'm 71 now. I've never fractured a bone, fortunately, and I still have osteoporosis, and I've not taken a medication other than low-dose bioidentical hormones. But I work with people who have fractures every day. So osteoporosis is something that is quite, you have to take it seriously. And especially with scoliosis, because scoliosis creates another issue with the bones regarding how weight is transferred through the spine. So we'll get into that a little bit later, but it's really, really important. And I've just always, even before my own diagnosis, I was interested in bones. So I've taught osteology, arthrology, spinal anatomy, and I've just had, you know, what I call a bonehead. That's me. I love bones. I've taught bone. And then when I had my own diagnosis, I'm like, how is that even possible? how is it possible that I was diagnosed and what did it mean? And I remember the day that I was diagnosed, I was driving across the Bay Bridge in San Francisco area, and I sobbed all the way home because I didn't know what that diagnosis meant. Did it mean that I couldn't roller skate anymore, that I couldn't ride my bicycle anymore? What did it mean? You know, I didn't know what it meant. And by the way, I did roller skate until I was 62. I don't advise things like that because, you know, we all have to make our choices. Mm. And I also just want to share with you briefly that my partner fractured her leg about 2 weeks ago. And it was a horrible, horrible fracture that was made much worse by osteoporosis. So here's the deal. I want to get this across because people will say, and it's true, well, was there trauma involved? Or was it low force trauma? Well, she did fall, not that far, but she fell far enough. That, you know, it's like 10 inches. But you know, if you fall and you're not seeing where you're going, you fall and you hit the right way, you can fracture. But it's how the bones fractures, and hers shattered. Mm-hmm. So if it's a clean fracture, that's different. But even the surgeon, when the surgeon got in there, said, you know, it was in pieces. And very, very serious surgery. And, you know, this is... Something like that happens and it changes your life for a long time. If you recover, she's young, she'll recover. The older we get, we don't recover as well. So again, there's a lot of things we have to think about regarding osteoporosis and the diagnosis. And then there, I want to say this too. Bone strength has to do with two components. The density of the bone, okay, so that infrastructure of the bone, and the quality of the bone. So some people can have normal bone density and still fracture because that quality is not good. Mm-hmm. But you have to have both. And that's why I was probably fairly lucky in my particular instance. I have not had a fracture, but I also understood what my bone quality was. And there is a free video over on YouTube. People can take a look at that where I interview a doctor from Sweden who developed a software called Trabecular Bone Score. And that gives a really important piece of information of the quality of the bone and not just density alone, because most doctors are treating the bone density rather than looking at the full picture, nutrition,
right,
gastrointestinal health, exercise, the importance of flexibility, importance of strength. And as you know, a lot of women, they don't have that upper body strength anymore. Or mm-hmm. They have to. Women have to really work to keep upper body strength. So there's a lot to this, as you can see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think a lot of people with scoliosis can certainly empathize with this, with the moment that you mentioned of when you were diagnosed first and this, you know, realization, I've got this condition. Now what? Right. What is it that I can do? What is it that I cannot do? How can I maybe help myself? And is there hope? I think that's
yes. Well, there's a lot of hope if the case is handled correctly. And I don't see that happening either. I work with people across the country. I do second opinions on bone densities. They're often incorrect. Often doctors do not do a full workup, because they're just giving a medication based on the bone density. Well, if somebody has osteoporosis, if you have one osteoporosis test, and in my world, I'd like to do it before menopause. But if you only have one bone density test, that doesn't mean that you're actually losing bone. We don't know yet. So that one test doesn't tell you that. You now want to look inside the bone, what we call bone markers, to see whether or not there's active loss occurring. And these are protein peptides inside bone. One will give us information about those osteoclasts. Those are the bone cells that chew up bone, right? Mm-hmm. And one will give us information about osteoblasts, the bone cells that build up bone. And if that bone turnover is high, well, we got a problem. And you want to try to stop that if there's a secondary cause, primary hyperparathyroidism, losing a 24-hour urine test, losing calcium out of the, you know, the urine because we're supposed to reuptake calcium, vitamin D deficiency. I mean, there's gastrointestinal problems. There's all sorts of things, hundreds of things that could impact whether or not we are actively losing bone. And those, we need to sort those out. Like when I see a patient, they're going to write and keep their diet diary for a week, and along with what are their bowel movements like? Because if people have chronic loose stools, that's the last thing I want to hear. Because when you increase the time with which you are food and, you know, the bolus and all that, I'm not thinking very well at 8 o'clock in the morning, but anyway, goes through the system, then you're not going to absorb as much. Mm. And we have celiac disease. We've got lots of different things. So if those things can be corrected, it's super, super, super important. And the other thing I want to add is that, and I wish I could stop. This is the thing that is one of the most aggravating things to me, Christine, is that women are not told prior to menopause that you can lose up to 20% of your bone density in the 5 years following. Mm-hmm. That is huge.
That is a lot, yes.
And so let's say somebody already has low bone density. Then they go through that. And this is the typical patient I get. Then now they're in their late 50s. And they have this, you know, a -3 or -3.5, which that's a T-score. And what that really means, one standard deviation is 12%. So if you're looking at a -3, you're looking at, you know, 30, 35% less bone density than an average 30-year-old. And that is a problem. Mm. Unfortunately, doctors do not, even gynecologists, it's stunning. They do not warn women about this. And not all women can take hormones. But I'm telling you that, you know, low-dose hormones for most women are just fine when it's done properly. It's really sad that women are not warned about this.
Mm. Yes, and I hear very often as well, and I'm sure it's related that when women just after menopause, usually they would all of a sudden lose a lot of height, and it can go really, really quickly. Is that something that is related to?
Well, I talk about height in my book. Typically, we're only supposed to lose about an inch. Yeah. And that's because the discs flatten out as we're aging, or there's degenerative changes in the disc between each vertebra. So that's kind of that we expect that. Mm-hmm. Now, I've lost about 3/4 of an inch. I'm 71. But by the way, we're taller in the morning than we are in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. So if you measure yourself first thing in the morning, you're going to be taller because your discs are nice and swollen. But then we're going to flatten out during the day. Now, when women have, or people, but I mostly work with women, have more than an inch loss, then yeah, it can be osteoporosis. And some women can go and it's usually women. Women, first fractures we see, by the way, are wrist fractures. They occur in women. Much more so than men. And that's the first clue a lot of times. They'll fall, they'll break the wrist. Well, 10 years ago, they'd have the same fall. They didn't break the wrist. And then we start seeing spinal fractures in late 50s and earlier. You know, I got people earlier that are breaking bones. And then in our 60s is when we start seeing more of the hip fractures. And those, depending on somebody's health, can really be life-changing, and death can occur depending on the case. And the older we get, the more challenging it is to deal with these fractures, which is why I'm a huge advocate of diagnosing properly, treating aggressively. And I'm a fan of medications when they're used properly and the right ones are used. And I've come a long way on that thinking, Christine, because I was originally trained as a chiropractor. Mm-hmm. And I haven't done that since the early 90s. But, you know, I was, wasn't very, you know, I wasn't schooled enough back then. And I am now. And I get it. And it took a lot to write that book. And by the way, I have a second book out. Maybe I'll talk about that before we leave. But, and I'm also in a doctor's group. There's a doctor's group that I'm in. Some of the top doctors in the country. I'm interviewing one tomorrow. His name's Paul Miller. I have a group called the Masterclass. Mm-hmm. And for people who really, really want to learn, I mean, these interviews and also the teaching that I do in these are just a bounce off of my book in terms of education. And the doctor's group that I'm in, they treat some of the worst cases in the world. I mean, it's terrible cases of osteoporosis. So I get to learn from them and understand that there is that place for medication. There is that wise use of medication. And the wise use is not what's been done up until now, or typically. Again, that's why we have to become our own best advocates for our health. Learning about bone, and for your audience here, the more you can learn, you can save yourself your physical independence. I mean, that's how big this is. It's no small potatoes about how important it is to shore up the bones.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just want to acknowledge all the people that are watching live here at the moment. We've got about 20 people who are here live. So feel free to ask your questions. And we've got one from Glynis right now saying, I have scoliosis and had to have a hip replacement 2 years ago because of arthritis. Does scoliosis make this more likely for my future?
It does in this way. Let me show you something. Okay, so when you have scoliosis, okay, all right, so I'm just going to twist the spine there. When you have scoliosis, and where we tend to fracture is the body of the vertebrae. This is our back, this is our spine, okay, so you can all see that. And this is the front of the vertebra. This is what fractures, this is what causes what you were describing earlier, Christine, is that hump. Because when it fractures, then the it can go like that, right?
Yeah.
And the reason this part fractures is because it has what we call cancellous bone. It's a thinner bone. It has what we call trabeculi in the body itself. And when we lose a lot of that infrastructure, so let's say again somebody has a -3 standard deviation, which is a T score, okay? Each one of those is 12%. So that's, again, over 30% less bone density than an average 30-year-old. We don't want to look at age match. You want to look at, what does an average 30-year-old look like? Now, I can tell you there's certain things about that are incorrect as well, but the point is that's what we've got, and it's good. It's actually a good analysis if you know how to interpret it. So with scoliosis, what happens is the abnormal weight bearing that goes through the spine. So you can see here, if I bend the body like this, the spine like this, this area is going to get more pressure coming down from the head, right?
Yes.
Whereas this side over here isn't going to get as much. Mm-hmm. So you're going to end up with different areas that have osteoporosis, say, more than others. Anytime somebody has an additional issue, mechanical issue with their spine, it becomes really important for them to understand about osteoporosis and if they have it, when to treat. Because I've had people also, I had one woman, I remember years ago, when I was a chiropractor, for whatever reason, I got all the people in town that had scoliosis. And I was deep into that. I was going to conferences on scoliosis just to learn. You know, I was very curious about the mechanics. And this woman called me and she said, well, you know, I've lost 20%. I've increased my scoliosis increased 20%. I said, well, that doesn't happen in an adult because rapidly progressing scoliosis happens during our growth years. Mm-hmm. And she came in and what had happened was she had a fracture that was missed by the radiologist in the concavity of the curve. So that's what increased the scoliosis. But let's talk about that diagnosis for a minute, scoliosis. So scoliosis is a diagnosis that is made if you have a deviation of 10% and that, you know, or more, and that's scoliosis. I actually don't like that you know, because when we get these diagnoses, whether it's scoliosis or osteoporosis, it's scary. Mm-hmm. And the diagnosis of scoliosis, if you have like 10%, I kind of refer to that as the lateral deviation, which sounds a lot different. I have people who've had 90 degrees. I mean, just huge, huge curves. We don't see that as much today because they're treated earlier in one way or another. But some people also have been treated and they have hardware in their spine. And the hardware can be a problem also, again, with you want to have that strong bone, because when you have hardware in there, the areas above it and below it, if there's an in, you know, some sort of impact that could occur, are more subject to fracture. Mm-hmm. And because there's no flexibility there, you see. So, so there are a lot of things to understand, but the number one thing, get my book so that I, what I say to patients, you must become bone literate. You must be able to have a conversation with your doctor, because most of them are not going to do the right lab work. You need to understand yourself what you need. And you need to understand about the medications so that when that discussion occurs, you can be in that discussion.
Yeah. So Glynis is saying her scoliosis is 75 degrees and she was... 75 degrees, she was told, at 60.
Right. So
it is quite a severe curvature.
So here's the thing. The 75 degrees is, that's a huge curve, right? Now, what I said earlier about typically you're not going to see somebody adult increase a curve by 20 degrees. You will see an increase, though, in scoliosis, especially something like a 75, because just weight bearing. This is why yoga is so important. This is why maintaining upper body strength is important, because no matter what we do, as we're aging, gravity has takes some away. Mm-hmm. And it, so we can just, but there's a functional part of scoliosis and a structural part of scoliosis. Functional part, we can deal with. And that's when you bend somebody over, and you know this, Christine, you bend somebody over, and if that hump goes away, well, that's all functional. And a good example of that is a mail carrier who's, you know, 20 years carrying something like that. That's all functional. But there's always, what I always say, and I said to my scoliosis patients, is there's always a functional component we can work with. Mm-hmm. And that's where, like yoga and all that come into play. Now, I'm not sure I answered Glynis's first question exactly. Can we put that back up again? Is that possible? She has scoliosis and she had to have a hip replacement 2 years ago. The scoliosis make this more likely for my future? More, I'm not sure what she's asking. Well, the arthritis is, you know, there are some people who have, are more prone to arthritis. You can have injuries in your hip or malformations of bones from birth. But if you're prone to arthritis, arthritis and osteoporosis can occur together, mm-hmm. or separately. So sometimes people get confused. They think that osteoarthritis is the same as osteoporosis. So you want to think of osteopor as in porous, and osis, condition of. And then osteoarthritis, arth is the joint, and itis is inflammation. So if you actually don't have pain, it's osis. But if you've got, but most people call it osteoarthritis. Yeah. So the point is, yeah, you've got to stay on top of your bones. The other thing I'm going to say is that typically a bone density does not work in someone like Glynis for the spine, unless. Unless there's no, here, let me show you this, because this is important, because most, I'm sorry to have to say all this stuff, but the bone density facilities in this country, I'm sure in your country, most of the people aren't trained. It's stunning, but they don't have to be trained. And I can tell you, it's That's pretty outrageous. But anyway, if the spine is straight, okay, so on, let me get to the, okay. If it's straight like that, it's very easy to get a bone density, right? And we only check the bone density from L1 to L4. The reason we do that is because there's no other bones in the way, like ribs and blah, blah, blah. So yeah. If you have it in your lumbar region, by the way, you have it everywhere. It's a systemic disease. There are cases where there's localized osteoporosis, but for the most part, it's not like you have osteopenia here and you've got osteoporosis there. You got it. So, yeah. But when you have scoliosis, you have significant rotation. Now that x-ray beams of the bone density is going to come through and include a lot of these other structures. When mm-hmm. that happens, you get a false negative reading.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So when you have scoliosis and glenosis, this is absolutely true for you. You need to get if they can get through to the spine and they get even one or two vertebrae that are not that rotated, but with 75, I'm not so sure. You always need to get your forearm done. I get the forearm done on everybody, and it gives me different information, different type of bone. The mid forearm is what we call compact bone. And the wrist area here has more cancellous bone. So I get, again, two more data points there. And the spine itself is going to be more of that cancels, that spongy bone I was talking about with the trabecula. The femur, the other two spots we can diagnose osteoporosis are the hip. And it's two places. It's the femur neck and what we call the total hip. And the total hip involves this area as well as up to the neck. So that's a mixed bone area. We don't tend to lose in the compact bone, meaning that hard type of bone like in the mid forearm, until we are in our 60s. Save one condition. There's one condition. Primary hyperparathyroidism tends to go after the compact bone specifically. Mm-hmm. And so I always look for that. But I know for a lot of people, you know, who are going to be watching this, this is a pretty high caliber conversation, you know, to understand. But the reason I do this is so then I'm hoping people are going to want to get the book and read the book and understand what are osteoclasts, what are osteoblasts.
I have to say, you know, I am 40, so I am like myself. I'm thinking maybe that this will come up, but so far in my own health, in my own body, it hasn't come up. So I haven't really, except for my clients, I haven't researched it. But I found that the book was really, it was really accessible, and it was really, I wouldn't say easy to read.
No, it's not. Yeah.
But in a way it was easy. It's all quite easy to understand. Let's say, yes, you have to sit down and, you know, take the time to digest it as well. But I feel like you've made a very complex subject much more accessible, which I think is so important. And as you say, you know, the knowledge is power, really, and so important for people to understand the condition. So thank you for writing it, is what I wanted to say.
Well, and you're 40. So you'll be, you know, when we start missing cycles, we actually lose bone. We know that if a woman loses one cycle a year, we're going to lose bone. So when we go into menopause, what happens is the main driving force of maintaining our bones is estrogen. Mm-hmm. And it's the type of estrogen that our ovaries produce. So when you go into menopause, you stop producing progesterone and you stop producing estradiol. And estradiol is what keeps those osteoclasts, the bone cells that chew up bone, it keeps them in check. So women can lose between 1% and 3% a year for 5 to 7 years. And if on top of it, they have a vitamin D deficiency or something like that, I mean, that's huge. And Glennis just asked, should I take calcium? And the interesting thing is that bone is very complex. So all you hear about is calcium, and you also hear about vitamin D. But it's not like you need protein. You need some of my worst cases, by the way, are vegans.
Right.
Okay. Interesting. And it just depends. You know, we need to have a healthy diet. And you want to try to get as much as you can from foods. But then there's also the misinformation where they say, don't take any calcium supplements. Get all your calcium from food. Well, when people make, or I don't care, any study, anybody claims that everybody should do this, it's wrong. So should people who don't need calcium take it? No. You know, should people consider it if they are dairy free? Yes, I'm dairy free. So I take calcium citrate. But what you want to do is make sure that you're getting 1,200 milligrams a day from all sources. So you kind of got to get a sense about that. I've had some people, like, they're cooking greens all day. They're doing all this stuff all day. But they don't understand that a lot of those greens have what we call oxalates. And oxalates bind calcium, and you don't get as much calcium. But here's the good news. Calcium binds oxalates. The reason that's important is because of kidney stones. So people, we're starting to see more kidney stones in vegans because they're doing so many of the greens with very high oxalates. But we need more calcium in those cases to bind that oxalate so it goes out in excrement rather than into our kidneys. So people, a lot of times, Christine, I find them, you know, they kind of go, and I understand it. I kind of did too. Initially, you kind of go a little crazy. Oh my goodness, I've got to do this. I've got to do that. And it's scary. And most cases, unless you're actively fracturing, you have time to get information so that you get it right and you don't go off the deep end. I mean, some people become vegans because they have osteoporosis or, you know, on and on. I mean, people get scared. And then here's the other thing, because I've railed a bit about the medical profession and lack of diagnosis, but then you go to an alternative doctor, also not specialists in osteoporosis, and they're recommending, we had a case the other day in our group, homeopathy. Oh my God, for a serious osteoporosis case, spare me. It's not going to do anything. And or here's a supplement. Does that even make sense? It doesn't make sense because I get here at my age at 71 with my bones. You're where you are with your bones at 40. Have we lived the same life? No. Do we have the same genetics? No. And genetics plays a big part. Mm-hmm. So there is, as you're hearing and you've read in my book, a lot of reasons for osteoporosis, of why we get to where we are. Which is why I like women, especially I see the blonde, blue-eyed woman like you, you know, and me. I look at us and I go, bone density before menopause. You know, I want to know where we're at before we hit that point.
Yes, absolutely. Good. I'm just looking at some. This is not quite an osteoporosis question. Someone's asking, I'm 18 years old, my scoliosis is congenital, and talking about exercise and scoliosis. Maybe we can bring it back to exercise and osteoporosis, just to keep it on topic. So I'm wondering if there are particular, let's talk about yoga, because, you know, this channel is called Yoga Berry, so we might as well talk about yoga. In yoga, is there anything that you would say, please don't do that if you've got osteoporosis?
Well, it depends again on the person, but typically if you've got osteoporosis, you've been diagnosed. You have to be careful with anything thrusting the body forward and also rotation. So one of my patients, I interviewed her last week. We followed her case to healing her body, but she fractured. She was just laying down and did a twist. Just a, you know, basic twist, and fractures her lumbar vertebra.
Right.
So that means her bones are in really bad shape. So we have to understand what, how bad the bones are, or are they really? So again, people should watch that video that I have on YouTube regarding bone density and bone quality. Just look up my name.
And I can link to it as well in the
Yeah. So the you're 18. If you have not sustained fractures, you can probably do most anything. I mean, I taught yoga and scoliosis for years, and no one broke a bone in my class. They were also much younger, you know. So the fact that you're younger, most likely your bone quality is good. But if you've already fractured, that becomes a different ballgame. But typically, if like say we are working on twists, and I work on twists with people with scoliosis. You have to understand the case, though. But if you're going, if you're twisting to one side and you're doing a posture where you're laying down, twist to one side, you can't go as far. Okay. Well, that's the side you're going to have to work, you know, and the side that you can go easier to, you might want to start on that side. You know, it's a little bit easier, but then you're going to have to work into that other side. It's a little more difficult. Same if I'm doing, you know, like doing this kind of thing with my neck, right?
Yeah.
Next you want to have, and then the other side, I can do this. Well, guess what side I got to put more into? You want to work both sides, but you have to put more time into the restricted area. Mm-hmm. But then there's also the strengthening part, and the you know, there's lots of different ways of, to think about the mechanics of a curve, but often the convex. Okay, where the curve is on this side. Okay, so you're like looking at it, the spine. And on this side, the bones are either, the muscles are either contracted, okay, and these are weak. So that's one way to think about it. It's not always necessarily true. But we want to be able to strengthen so that these guys can be pulled back. But we also want to stretch this side that's been contracting, you know, because even if it's congenital, as she was saying, I'd like to know what is the congenital things. We can have bones that are malformed, or we have idiopathic, which is happens in puberty, and then it can go to a pretty big extreme, and that is more a issue with the muscle fibers itself. You know, slow twitch, fast twitch, and you know, lots of different aspects to why at puberty that can really go. And there's no abnormalities in the spine itself necessarily. And some do have what we call like a hemivertebrae, where the, one of the vertebrae or more are not, they're not fully formed on one side.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Okay, so forward bends, twists, rather not if you've been diagnosed with osteoporosis.
Oh, wait, but let's add this. So how do you properly do a forward bend? You bend from the hips. So this is your hips here are your hinge. Your back shouldn't be involved in it. Mm-hmm. And so you teach that, right? Hinge at the hip.
Yeah.
So if you're hinging at the hip, you're not rounding the back and putting a lot of force into it. I'm not saying you can't even round the back at that age. You're 18. You may very well be able to hang forward. All right. But I don't know your case. Mm. So it depends on the case. And, but you're certainly doing the right thing by being in this group and asking these questions so that you can move forward with more confidence. And even twists. I mean, I still do twists, but I know my body and I understand the bone density that I have as well as the quality of my bone. And by the way, I'm going to start medications next month. And in retrospect, I think I probably should have started a few years ago because you don't want it to get so low that you can't come back.
Hmm. So Heger's saying in a might be a little late, so might be answered before. How do we know where we are in, about osteoporosis? How do you check for it? Is it enough with an X-ray? You cannot see it with an X-ray, can you?
Well, on an X-ray, it's a bit of a misnomer. So if on the X-ray report it says osteopenia, you actually have osteoporosis. That's an old a term that they've always used in radiology, meaning low bone density. You can only diagnose osteoporosis by bone density. That said, if I can I see it on x-ray? Yes, if it's really severe. But you can't if it's just like, say, borderline. That wouldn't show up on an x-ray. But yes, sometimes I can see it. Like I had one last week. The bones were pretty see-through. I mean, you know, you can see it. But the bone density is what you want to be able to get. And get my book so that when you go in to get a bone density, you actually make sure that that technician is on their toes. Because you start asking questions. Oh, wait a minute. My leg's supposed to be rotated. Oh, wait a minute. They're going to be paying attention. Because I'm telling you, most of them have not been trained. But you want to get a good bone density. So you want to direct your own bone show.
Great. Okay. I wanted, and I asked you just before we came live, obviously, I asked you about Dr. Fishman, because I know that a lot of people in this community will be familiar with his work for scoliosis, because he's been doing a lot of studies for particular poses for scoliosis. So would you mind talking about it a little bit? I know he's got 12 yoga poses that he recommends for osteoporosis. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, first of all, the problem I have with Dr. Fishman is the claim that you can gain 1%. I can't even remember now. It's been a long time since I looked at his work. But you can gain 1% a year or something like that on doing yoga. I'm telling you, there's no studies. His studies are gathering bone densities from around the country, and then, which is nuts. And seriously, I'm already saying to you that most of these facilities are not, they do not have trained individuals. He's not a densitometrist. I doubt that he knows how to read them, because I've had some of his patients, some who will say, oh, I gained 7% bone density in my hip. Well, I already know it's an error, because you don't gain 7% in your hips, period. I mean, you just don't, unless maybe you're on a medication, but you're not going to gain it doing yoga. So, and that's the unfortunate thing about all this, because the OsteoStrong, which I've told you about, there's a video over on YouTube, because I'm also tired of those folks making false claims too. But is yoga good for bone? I would say yes. What my beef is the claim that it's going to do much for osteoporosis, if anything, that would be show up in a bone density. So that said, let's look at yoga in a different way. Does yoga prevent fractures? Yes. Why? Because most fractures occur because people fall. Yoga does what? Works on balance. You know, that is critical. Mindfulness. Doing the exercises that will help you. If you are not flexible and you start to go into a fall, you're not going to catch yourself so much. Mm-hmm. A lot of ways to look at this. If you're not strong enough, you're not going to catch yourself. So there's lots of things to think about with the mechanics of a fall. So if I'm going to go into a fall, am I just being mindless? Or is it a freak accident? Of course those happen. We're human beings. I'm not Buddha. I'm not going to be mindful 24/7. But then if you go into a fall, are you catching yourself? And you see some of these older folks go down and they're just like, they barely trip and they're just toppling over. You know, my reflexes are still very good. And here's another thing, Christine, you know this too. A lot of women were never into sports. So they don't develop those quick, you know, reactions. So doing things like even ping pong, frankly, anything to get our reflexes going. I'm a big fan of pickleball. I don't know if you've heard of it.
No.
It's the fastest. Oh, my God. You have to look it up. It is so much fun. It's like a small tennis court, but it is a blast to play. I get to move a lot, and it's very quick, you know, at the net, working like, you know, with like ping pong. I'm a former tennis player. But now I love pickleball so much, I don't know that I'll go back to tennis. But that keeps my reflexes going. Mm-hmm. So that's really, really important. So yes, yoga for osteoporosis, I think, is going to reduce fractures on a lot of levels.
And then what not necessarily increase bone density. That's what you're saying.
Right. If you have borderline osteoporosis and good bone quality, you might be able to not take medications for a while. But you can't think that, say, a -4, which is very, very serious, or even a -3, frankly, with scoliosis, that yoga is going to do anything for that. Now, let me say this too. You've also got people who claim that they've gained it in the spine. That can be good or not good. When you gain bone density in the spine, it can be from a fracture that you didn't know about, might not have even felt, believe it or not. And it can also be because of arthritic changes. Those are the two most common causes why we see an increase in bone density in the spine. So Fishman is claiming people are gaining in the spine. I'm looking to see, is it arthritic? I've been doing this a long time. I want to find the magic bullet. Mm-hmm. It came from an alternative perspective. I haven't found it. Right. Mm-hmm. And now I see a question regarding vibration.
Vibration plate, yeah. From okay. Jane.
Yeah. So vibration, will it, again, I'm not buying their claims. There's some studies, and there's, in that particular situation, you have all these vibration companies claiming, well, NASA funded this and blah. Yeah, they funded actually the, not the Merodyne, but Merodyne is close to the Juvent. They funded the Juvent machine, that particular machine for NASA, because when people are in outer space, they come back and they've lost a lot of bone density. Oh, they're always looking for something that will help them reduce that. They never used it. You know, they did the study, but they never used it. So, okay, so there's that. But all these companies, you have to understand advertising. So all the companies say NASA, and vibration, like their vibration is the same. Well, first of all, does it do anything? I think it, I don't know. I mean, it does some, again, not going to do much for a very serious case. It is not an alternative to medications when you have a serious case, period. Just not. But is it part of an overall program? It's like, say you're doing yoga, you're eating well, you're doing vitamin D, vitamin K2, you're doing a good amount of protein, you got your calcium down, you got, you make sure you got enough B12. All these vitamins, as you'll see in my book, are very important for our bone health. Could it be part of the program? Well, if I was going to get one, and I actually do have both of them because they were both given to me, the Merodyne has a similar feel to it. It should feel like a hum, okay? So then you've got vibration machines that feel like they're going to knock your brains out. Well, what do I think about that? I'm not so sure that's good for the brain cells. I'm not so sure it's good for detached retina. It's very violent, so you don't want to do that. And not all vibration is the same. So vibration can be like this, right? That's, an oscillating kind of thing. The studies that are there are vertical displacement, like you're kind of running. So, okay, if you have this hum that is giving you the kind of this information and vertical displacement of 0.5 milligrams, very tiny, so you just feel like a hum, it's not going to hurt you. I do suspect it's going to be really good for the feet and the legs. But that's never been studied. And the studies, they looked at the spine and the hip. I've always had a hard time believing that was going to do that much. But if I do recommend the Juvent, and it's expensive, it's like $3,500 for people who certainly can't exercise or, like that, it's something, right? Mm-hmm. And it's going to put something into the body. So, I would say, again, do not, here's the main thing, don't fall into the category of thinking it's going to cure osteoporosis.
Right. Mm. Good. There are lots of questions coming in now, but I am conscious of time. So do you want to tell us about your second book, maybe? Do you want to tell us? So I've got this one. I've got the No Nonsense Bone Health Guide, which is the one that I've just been reading, which was great, and lots of exercise advice and nutritional advice as well, and just about
checking and diagnosis.
Diagnosis, yes. So Heger was asking about diagnosis.
Yeah, and I spend like two or three chapters just on bone density alone, and then there's also a page how to get a good bone density. Mm-hmm. So then you can take that in, and you can just, again, when you start poking at whoever's doing their job, they're going to do it better. You know, and that's important. Yes. So this book doesn't seem like it has anything to do with bone, but it's Dr. Lonnie's No Nonsense Sun Health Guide.
Okay.
And looking at you, my guess is you would be interested in this too. The truth about vitamin D, sunscreen, sensible sun exposure, and skin cancer. Mm-hmm. Why the heck did I write this book? Because I write about things that affect me. I've had about 25 skin cancers now. And that's because I abuse the sun.
You're in California. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah. But then, you know, here's the interesting thing, Christine. I wondered, I had a vitamin D deficiency. This is what caused me to write the book. I'd been diagnosed in my 40s with osteoporosis, a vitamin D deficiency, and skin cancer. None, that didn't make sense to me. How can I have a vitamin D deficiency in California? Because we have fog here. And when you have fog, that particular ray that makes vitamin D doesn't get through. And also during the winter, we have what we call vitamin D winter. And you don't make it when you're wearing sunscreen, not as much. So,
we're basically doomed in the UK.
Yeah. And so, you know, I'm a big fan. I wear hats all the time. You know, I have done that since I was 40. I'm a big advocate of learning about what we can do to avoid things and catching them early. And I'll tell you, 3 months after this book was published and out, I diagnosed one of my own melanoma. I had a melanoma that I caught, and it was like a freckle that just changed color. People think they're all looking at moles. You got to read this book because, again, you can save yourself a lot of misery from that. So I'm a big fan of us learning how to guide our own diagnosis when our doctors aren't.
Mm. Yes, absolutely.
And let me say something about vitamin D. Vitamin D, most people should take at least 2,000. We've even found deficiency in Australia. I mean, you know, you wouldn't think that would be the case, but we do. And certainly in nursing homes where people aren't getting enough sun at all in general. But you don't want to take too much. So a lot of alternative doctors are recommending like 5,000 or 10,000 a day. That can be a really bad thing for a certain subset of people. So 2,000 a day is generally safe for almost everybody. But I always say test calcium levels and your vitamin D level. Mm-hmm. Because if your calcium level is high, it could be due to if you're taking too much vitamin D. And I'll tell you the number of what the vitamin D should be in the blood, 45 nanograms per milliliter. Now, in Europe, it's a different measurement. And you have, I can't think what it is right now. I think it's a different range. I'm going to have to send that to you, Christine. I don't know if you can add that to the video, but 45 nanograms per milliliter, that's how we measure it here in the States. But there's another measurement in Europe. And you want to be in that range because too high or too low is not good for bones and other issues as well.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah, if you can send that, then I can add it.
It's in my book, but I just can't remember what I wrote.
Then I can add it into the description as well, and then for people to find out more, obviously. So yeah, so thank you so much. I know we've been talking for an hour. It's gone very, very quickly. But thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. As it's such a big topic, and you know, we could speak for hours probably about this. But what's the best way to get in touch with you if people have any further questions or if they want to
work? Well, I don't answer questions, you know, because I get like hundreds of emails a day. But you can go to my website, Lonnie Simpson, L-A-N-I Simpson, S-I-M-P-S-O-N. If you really want to get educated more, you know, I have this thing called the Masterclass, and I have about 150 videos that will be available at some point. But if people join, then they get a few videos. And tomorrow I'm interviewing one of the top osteoporosis experts in the world. So I do these top-notch interviews as well as my own presentations. Great. About it there.
Okay, excellent. Great. So thank you so much. And thank you so much, everyone who's watching. We had quite a few people tuning in. I know if you've tuned in late, make sure you watch it from the beginning. You've got all the information there. And just before we leave, I just wanted to say that next week there is no back chat because I'm on holiday, but I'm back the week after. So yes, thank you so much, Dr. Lani. Really, really lucky to chat with you.
All right. Well, take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, I would be super grateful if you could leave me a 5-star rating and review, which will help me to create lots more amazing content. If you have any questions or suggestions, reach out to me on Instagram at yogaberry.scoliosis or visit my website at www.yogaberry.net.